Welcome to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're gearing up for Halloween here at Central Time, clearly. And we have a special guest here to help. She's an expert in all things strange, freaky, and terrifying. And she's here to talk about her new book on creatures of the night.
Do you have a favorite creature of movie, legend, or literature? Vampires, maybe. Werewolves. Mermaids? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And tell us about your favorite Halloween-style creature. Or you can email, by the way, talk@WPR.org.
Those terrifying mermaids. Every time.
They're kind of scary.
Well, our guest is Varla Ventura. She's the author of Banshees, Werewolves, Vampires, and Other Creatures of the Night. She's the curator of the Wiser Magical Creatures and Paranormal Parlor series of ebooks, and is also the author of several other books, including The Book of the Bizarre and Among the Mermaids. Mm-hmm. Varla, welcome to Central Time.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, you are billed as a person who loves all things strange, freaky, and terrifying. What is it that draws you to these kinds of stories and creatures?
Well, I think I was sort of raised in an environment that fostered a love of the strange. These are the kinds of books of folklore and magic that were on my mother's bookshelves. We always had tarot cards and Ouija boards around. Halloween was probably a bigger deal than Christmas in many, by most accounts. And in fact, we usually left our Halloween decorations up for Christmas.
I know this house.
And not to say that my mother was particularly morbid. She just sort of fostered a love for monsters in me from a young age.
Hmm. Well, in this book, you're focusing on banshees, werewolves, and vampires. Why those three?
Well, you know, there's really thousands of creatures of the night. I felt that werewolves and vampires are certainly, you can't write a book about creatures of the night without including them. And they've certainly been, you know, getting a lot of press in years of late. And banshees don't get quite as much press, but they are certainly more terrifying in many regards than many of the other creatures of the night. So I think I had to pick three that I had the most material on, and those were the three that kept repeatedly coming up.
And your book is a collection of sort of older literature and some modern stuff too, but it seems as though the people that you're sharing their accounts, they're believers.
Oh, certainly. I think that was one of the things that I sort of discovered in curating the ebook collection that then sort of melded into a couple of books, the mermaid book that you mentioned, Among the Mermaids, and then this book that just came out, were sort of born in this research of volumes of forgotten lore. And it was really wonderful to learn about the secret lives of these upstanding citizens and their beliefs in ghosts and their penchant for writing horror.
Well, I want to start with banshees. That's where your book starts. And before I started, I thought, banshees, how scary can they be? And then it turned out that they were really scary. And when I was done, I had to reassure myself by telling myself that I wasn't Irish and I didn't come from an old Irish family, so I was probably okay. But can you tell us about banshees and where some of that lore comes from?
Certainly. I would have to agree with you. I think I entered into it not realizing, thinking they were more of a beautiful creature. But I think in many regards, banshees are the scariest. They're more equated with a ghost than with a supernatural creature like a werewolf. They have their, for the most part, accounts are of banshees being quite beautiful, but there are many times when they are sort of horrible hags. And the scariest thing about them is not how they look or how they sound, it's what they mean. If you see a banshee, it means that somebody, yourself or somebody that you love, usually in your family, is going to die. So that's pretty scary.
And they seem to have a particular foothold in Ireland.
Yeah, I mean the original banshee, as we know it, is specific to Ireland. Parts of Wales and Scotland have creatures with very similar names, And so it's kind of throughout the UK and even in Brittany, there are very similar creatures. And then there are sort of the counterparts of the banshee that exist cross-culturally in other places. And there are a few accounts of something for all intents and purposes sounds just like a banshee. It's just called something else. But the banshee, as I first describe it, is the Irish banshee.
Could you tell us a story or two from your banshee lore?
Yes, well, I'd love to. one of my favorite stories actually is this story. There's a man named Elliot O'Donnell, and he was probably the foremost researcher on banshees. He wrote a massive volume all about banshees and other Irish ghosts in the late 1800s. And what was interesting about him is that he actually had an inherited family ghost. His family was haunted by a banshee, and he took his scholarship very seriously in his collection of stories. He was sort of like the Grimm brothers collected stories throughout Europe and Eastern Europe. He did that with Irish folklore and banshees specifically. And what was key about him is that he was a believer. He had had paranormal experiences as a child, and this led him sort of down the path. But he was also many things. He was a policeman in the United States for a while. He was an actor. He had kind of this wild and rich life. And he told this wonderful story about presenting to the Irish Literary Society his theory. He was the first person to say that not all banshees are beautiful women in the guise of luring you out into the dark of the night to leave you in the cold to die. He said, they're not all like that. There's many different kinds. And a woman stands up in the audience and she says, she protests that he has made this declaration. She doesn't protest it because she doesn't believe in banshees. She protests it because her banshee is beautiful. And I just love that story because it sort of shows how integrated into the Irish way of thinking that the existence of banshees were. So you're not left going, our banshees are real. It's more about the debate of what they look like and, you know, who's the foremost authority on it.
One interesting detail seems to be that if they're the old hags with the evil eyes, they will shriek and laugh maniacally. But if they are, you know, sort of the beautiful, friendlier banshees, they will sing you a chorus instead.
That's true. And they also are, you know, terribly sad. Many of the banshees are either they died in childbirth or perhaps they lost a child or in some way caused the death of their child. And so it's believed that that is the reason that they sort of keen and mourn so intensively.
Well, let's move on from banshees and talk about another of the creatures of the night in your book, werewolves. And you write that we tend to feel pity and empathy for werewolves. Why would that be?
Yeah, you know, I do believe that we sort of lust after vampires and banshees maybe we fear, but with werewolves it could be the dog-like quality that leads us to have some sympathy for them. But I also think that we all sort of have an ability, we have it within us to be werewolf-like. We've all had moments of rage, and there are many accounts of, you know, humans that go sort of beyond the pale and, you know, into furious frenzies of murder and mayhem. So I think that there's many of us who can kind of relate to that that moment when you completely lose control. And then the other thing is that werewolves are, you know, they are only that sort of ferocious beast under certain circumstances. And much of the folklore are accounts of werewolves trying to hide the fact that they're a werewolf or trying to run away because they don't want to hurt the people that they love. So I think that, again, that has to do with sort of our own ability to understand that and our connection with, you know, man's best friend and the way that we view a werewolf more as a companion, perhaps.
Interesting companion. Well, we're talking right now to Varla Ventura. She's the author of Banshees, Werewolves, Vampires, and Other Creatures of the Night.
And we want to hear from you. Do you have a favorite creature of the night and why? Do you have a favorite representation of a vampire or a werewolf in film, TV, or fiction? Do you have a family legend about one of these creatures you can share with us? You can call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
We're talking with Varla Ventura about our favorite monsters. She's the author of Banshees, Werewolves, Vampires, and Other Creatures of the Night.
Our guest is fascinated by these monsters. Are you? Do you have a vampire obsession, whether we're talking film, fiction, or legend, or werewolves, or you name it? Or do you have a question about these creatures of the night? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Varla, we were talking about werewolves just a little bit ago, and Wisconsin, it turns out, has had its share of connections with werewolf sightings and legends. Could you tell us about one of the first?
Oh, sure. Wisconsin has had many, many weird happenings. One of the first werewolf sightings, it was the first in Wisconsin and one of the first documented in the U.S., was in 1936. And it was a man named Mark Shackleman who was driving along Highway 18, and he spied a dark figure digging up an old Native American mound. As he got closer, he realized the creature stood well over 6 feet tall and was covered in hair. The creature had a face that resembled something between that of an ape and a dog. Shackleman noticed that the creature had three human-like fingers on each hand and smelled of rotting meat. Scared, but intrigued, Shackleman returned to the same spot the following night in the hopes of getting another look. This time he was shocked not only to find the creature again, but also to hear him speak. Astounded by what he thought was a neo-human language, he immediately sensed that the creature was evil and retreated to a safe spot. After that incident, he never saw the creature again. And actually, there are several other sightings. Another one that I included in the book was also along Highway 18, and that was in 1964. A man named Dennis Fulis spotted a very similar creature as he was driving home from work. He said that with his headlights on, he was able to see a large animal weighing between 400 and 500 pounds running across the highway. He figured the creature was at least 7 feet tall and covered in coarse brown fur.
I have to figure where Highway 18 is so I can stay away from it. I don't know.
Yeah. if your listeners have.
I'm sure they have. Actually, call and let us know where Highway 18 is and if you live on it and if you've seen any werewolves on it. Interesting history there. And there's another interesting story about werewolves in Wisconsin, and it has to do with Native American legend as well. And supposedly this story ends with the birth of the father of werewolves. Can you tell us a bit about that one?
Certainly. This sort of goes along with a lot of the Native American stories of shape-shifting or skinwalkers. That's another term for them. There was a tribe that was in Wisconsin, and they were under the guidance of a spirit known as Wiska Kachek, and I'm going to apologize for probably not saying that correctly. Wiska Kachek was a shapeshifter who sought refuge in the woods and had a friendly relationship with humans. There were two boys that were part of the tribe that approached Wiska Kachek because they had been out hunting and they were starving. They couldn't find enough food to feed the tribe. And so the legend is that Wiska Kachek granted these two boys the ability to shapeshift into werewolves, and on the stipulation that they could only use it to hunt. They could never use this ability to hurt another human being. Well, you give a couple boys an ability like this, and, you know, it's inevitable that someone's going to make them mad. And, in fact, that's what happened with one of the boys. He got into an argument, got angry at this other guy, and killed him. When Wiska Kachek found out, he banished him, and that sort of evolved into the one of the first. He's known as the father of the werewolves.
And we have a couple of questions from callers who couldn't stay on the line. Mike in Madison wants to know if you know about the Salampa, which is a ghost in Panama and Colombia.
I do not.
All right. Well, Mike, you might have to call and tell us more about that one.
You need to tell us. Yeah.
You stumped our monster expert. And Catherine and Cameron wants to hear about Silkies.
Selkies. Well, I love Selkies. I definitely got a lot more into Selkies with my book Mermaids, Among the Mermaids. Selkies are essentially very similar to a mermaid. They, although they are half seal and half human, usually female. And there's a lot of legends surrounding them. And many people still to this day, when you look out at a Selkie, especially in the British Isles and Ireland specifically, and Scotland as well, you'll see many seals with human eyes. Now, the seal can come on land, and she can bury she can take her coat off. As long as she knows where her coat is, she can stay, and she can be the wife to a mortal and have children and, you know, have a wonderful life. But as soon as somebody discovers her coat, she's forced to go back to the sea. And there's been several wonderful movies. The Secret of Ronan Ish was based on this legend.
Hmm. Are they scary at all, Silkies, or are they just sort of, I don't know, poignant?
You know, I think they're scary to a certain extent in that we definitely romanticize mermaids and Selkies. But in a real encounter, I think you'd find that there's a certain element of sort of a supernatural terror that might seize you in the moment.
I can imagine that. And, you know, that brings me to another point. I want to ask you, you've been on the trail of the paranormal for a long time. This is something you're deeply fascinated with. Do you believe that there are things that we cannot explain away?
Absolutely. I consider myself a supernaturalist. I believe in the possibility and the existence of many, many things beyond our regular sight and beyond the veil, sort of. And I think also that it serves us a specific purpose, as I think legends and stories have always served us. And that allows us to suspend belief long enough to sort of tap into a very creative and infinite part of our brain that I think we need in order to think outside the box and to come up with, you know, new solutions to everyday problems. Sometimes you've just got to, it's the same reason I think we check out and watch a horror movie or even a sitcom. It allows us to kind of believe that something exists outside of our day-to-day drone.
Do you have a favorite story from this book that especially resonates with you, or a favorite creature?
I think my favorite, well, I'm hard-pressed to say my favorite story, but certainly one of my favorite stories. There's a vampire story that's in the book that is called Le Motte Amorus, or Claremond, as it's known. And the guy who wrote it was a very interesting fellow. He wrote, he was a friend with Victor Hugo, and he had, you know, kind of this whole alternate life. And it's a somewhat unknown vampire story, and for that reason I decided to include it in its entirety in the book. It's not terribly long. And without giving it away, I will tell you that it involves a priest, a vampire, and some rather sordid, it was written in, I believe, 1909, and for the times it was quite sordid. There's nothing too graphic in there, but there's some things that it implies. It's a beautifully written story, and it's not very well known, and it's kind of scary, actually.
Yeah, I started that one. I haven't finished it yet, so now I'll have to read the rest of it, maybe,
yeah.
Maybe on Halloween. Well, as long as we're talking about vampires, you know, they have long been fascinating to people, I guess because they're supposed to be so crazily beautiful and, you know, kind of lusty, too. What do you think it is that's appealing about vampires?
Well, I mean, personally, I've always liked, you know, the pale with the black hair. I mean, that's kind of that sort of gothic look. I think, actually, just to get, you know, kind of more philosophical about it, I do think that because vampires have this connection to blood, that we have an emotional reaction to them. And there's something incredibly lusty about a bite on the neck. So I think that that's probably why we continue to romanticize vampires.
Now, Mary Shelley shows up in your book. She's the author of Frankenstein. How is the author of the first English vampire story related to her?
The first vampire story published in English was published 70 years before Dracula, actually. And there's the wonderful story that Mary Shelley, Percy Bysshe Shelley, and her sister and Lord Byron were at this lake house on Lake Geneva in Switzerland, and they had, it was a sort of a dark and stormy night, and they said, everybody write a ghost story, and we'll see whose is the scariest. And they were sort of known for doing these kind of like ghostly experiments. And Mary Shelley that night wrote her outline for what became Frankenstein. Now, Lord Byron wrote a short story, a sketch of a short story, about a character and a novel called The Vampire. Lord Byron had a personal physician by the name of John William Polidori, and Byron threw the story out. He said, "This is trite. I'm not going. This is not my thing." But Polidori, on that night, kind of took that idea and ran with it. And with Byron's permission, he turned that idea of Lord Byron's into a full-length novel, and that became The Vampire, which is, again, was the first vampire story published in English.
Interesting. So a lot happened on that dark and stormy night.
Busy night, yeah.
All right. Well, Varla, thank you so much for joining us today, and have a happy Halloween.
Oh, thank you. Happy Halloween, and happy Halloween to all your listeners.
We've been talking to Varla Ventura. She's the author of Banshees, Werewolves, Vampires, and Other Creatures of the Night.
Coming up next, it's the news. Then we'll talk about the video game sensation Minecraft. Our guest says it's the most creative game ever made for a computer. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.